Chapter 8. I stared at Amir and took a moment to process what he had said.
Satellite phones?
Heywan asked.
They still work?
Yeah, Amir replied. They're designed to work during natural disasters and things like that. They don't rely on telecommunication networks like our mobiles do. You would have to ask Malik how it all works, but yeah, it means we can contact each other.
Can we maybe have a chat about all this?
Kat asked.
I don't suppose you guys have a coffee machine or something.
Of course we do, Amir laughed. Medical staff survive on caffeine, and that's doubly true with dinosaurs around.
He stood up and led us down the dim hallway, past the small reception desk, and out into the main lobby area of the hospital. I could see now that the covers over the main doors were bedsheets, and the light coming in was dimly filtered through the fabric. We walked across the linoleum floor and through another doorway that led into a different ward. The lights were on, and there was a waiting area with comfier chairs, a fridge, and a coffee maker.
So, you're a doctor?
Kat asked as we made our way to the seats.
I'm a neurologist,
Amir nodded, as he grabbed some cups from beside the coffee maker and put an espresso pod inside the machine.
But at the moment, I just do anything and everything. We've all had to pitch in and help since there's not a full staff. Most people left when all this kicked off, but those who stayed to help have had to learn a whole lot on the job.
It must be tough, I replied, as I sat down on a green fabric chair. Have you thought about leaving to be with your brother?
Not really,
Amir sighed, as he handed Heywan the first coffee and started to make another.
Malik keeps me up to date with everything going on, and it just sounds too dangerous to travel that far. Unlike you guys, I would be bloody useless with a gun.
I could teach you.
Kat grinned as she happily took the mug she was handed.
If you can perform brain surgery, you can shoot a gun.
Maybe. But I'm happy to stay here where I can help people.
He handed me a cup of coffee and I gratefully accepted. The smell alone was enough to energize me, and it tasted like what I used to drink at the university. Amir made his own cup and then took a seat opposite us with a sigh. Like all the other medical workers we had met, he looked tired. So, I said, your brother, Malik, is at Scampton Air Base. Has he ever mentioned the briefcase we delivered from Brigadier Walston?
He did, Amir nodded. There's actually a lot going on with the tests and research that they've done down there. I just don't know if I should really share it. Although, if the world's ending, I don't suppose it matters.
I looked at the girls and leaned in closer to Amir. It sounded like he knew something we didn't, and we needed all the information we could get in order to survive. We delivered that briefcase, I said. We were trusted to bring it all that way, and we know there was dino DNA inside.
They told you what was inside? Amir asked in surprise.
Well,
Heywan hummed.
We just had a little peek to make sure we weren't carrying anything too dangerous.
We got it there safely, I assured him. To be honest, I've been really curious if our efforts were worth it. So if you feel comfortable telling us what you know, I'd certainly appreciate it. The more knowledge we have going forward, the more likely we are to survive this thing.
I can understand that. But if it's the case, we've got more than just a briefcase to discuss.
The neurologist sighed, and he sat forward as he sipped his coffee.
You know that they've been studying the DNA, trying to work out as much as they can about these creatures. But they also wanted to study the way they get here.
The portals.
Kat nodded.
Exactly, Amir said. Malik told me that they've found some strange information regarding the portals. More specifically, they've picked up strange radio signals coming from them.
Radio signals? I asked. So what does that mean? That someone's controlling them?
We don't know, the doctor shrugged. They found a portal near the base that kept opening at the same time every few days. So they use that for their research.
These things are timed?
Kat asked.
Like they have some kind of schedule? I thought they were just random.
Not all of them, I cut in. I read about it online a while back.
Yeah, some of the portals seem to open on a schedule, Amir nodded. Not all, but one of the scientists noticed that this same one kept opening at the same time of day, right to the second.
And that's how he worked out where these radio signals were coming from, I concluded. Traced it back to a certain satellite or something?
They tried to, but they couldn't work it out, Amir said. Malik said the signal is coming from a band of the radio spectrum that we don't use with our satellites.
What?
Heywan and I both gasped. My mind raced with the new information, and I immediately thought back to the alien theory we had discussed before. It had sounded so ridiculous, but I kept coming back to it in my mind. And these strange new radio signals fit neatly into the theory.
Wait, if we don't use this spectrum thing, are you saying they still have no idea where the radio signal is being transmitted from?
Heywan asked, as she placed her empty cup on the floor.
Exactly, Amir confirmed. It's impossible for them to trace it when they don't know what they're even looking at.
This is some crazy shit,
Kat said, as she ran a hand through her curls.
I didn't hear about any of this at the power plant base.
Do they have any theories? I asked. Anyone that they suspect might be behind this?
They did at the start, Amir sighed and took a sip of coffee.
Sounds like every country blamed each other when the portals first appeared. We all thought it was some form of terrorism that had been created to take over Britain. Then we realized this is happening in every corner of the Earth.
Nowhere is safe,
Kat nodded.
That's why this radio signal is even more concerning, Amir added.
What do you mean? I asked.
It's not just the satellites we have that don't transmit signals in this band of the spectrum, the doctor explained with wider eyes. Even our spacecraft don't use this. Nothing human-made transmits signals this way. Not on the ground, not in the atmosphere, and not even when we send crafts into space.
Amir gestured toward the sky, and I got chills as I realized what he was saying.
It can only be coming from another life form, I breathed.
The doctor looked uneasy with the conclusion, but I could tell he couldn't find another answer either. He grimly shrugged and sipped his coffee instead, and we all sat for a moment in tense silence.
But what about the DNA?
Heywan finally asked.
Did they find anything out that could help get some answers?
They did, Amir assured. But they didn't exactly find what they expected to with that either.
Oh, shit, I sighed. What did they find?
They've essentially confirmed these dinosaurs aren't lab-grown as they previously conjectured, Amir said. Not in any labs we're capable of possessing, at least. Now, my brother and I aren't molecular paleontologists, but Malik filled me in a bit as well as he could. He said any gene pattern we could hope to acquire of prehistoric reptiles would be incredibly degraded and require gene splicing in order to clone a dinosaur species as well as we could.
Yeah, I read an article about that not long ago, I said with a nod. I thought some scientists found evidence that some modern gene splicing stunt had been done.
Yes, they've discounted that evidence now,
Amir said in a bleak tone, and I furrowed my brow.
In order for that to be the case, we would first need to acquire this prehistoric sample, which simply hasn't been possible. Then a modern animal would need to be used in the splicing process. The traces of their genetic pattern would be present in these samples Scampton has been studying, but they aren't.
So, we're not dealing with a Jurassic Park scenario,
Heywan mumbled and slumped in her seat.
Doesn't look like it, the doctor replied with a slight smile.
No bullfrog gene splicing with these dinos.
Wait, you're saying there is nothing recognizable in these samples? I clarified as my pulse quickened. There's nothing that even sort of resembles a creature from Earth?
Nothing.
The neurologist's eyes widened.
The genetic patterns they're reading from these samples are entirely foreign mutations. They can't be traced in any way to any species on Earth, not even partially.
I can't believe this, I sighed as I rifled my hair. I mean, fuck. I've worried this alien conspiracy felt too plausible for a while now, but oh, this shit almost confirms it. It all fits together. The unidentifiable radio signals and these unknown dino genes.
I was never too keen on the alien theory,
Kat said with a grimace.
I knew the idea was thrown around on the internet a bit, but I honestly never gave it much thought. I don't know why. It's no crazier than living, breathing dinosaurs running riot all over the Earth. Who else knows all this?
Heywan asked the doctor.
Everyone who is at the base?
Pretty much, Amir nodded. Malik said it's not really common knowledge as far as the public goes, but the base has all been let in on the discoveries. I guess they hope if the soldiers have all the facts, they might have more chances during battle. And they need all the help they can get, especially with all the damage to the bases that's happened recently,
What do you mean?
Kat asked. I'll show you, Amir said, and he reached into his white jacket and pulled out his phone. Your internet works? I asked. Sometimes, the doctor replied. The Wi-Fi occasionally connects here, but very slowly. It's gotten almost unusable. The last time I tried, it took an hour to load half an image, but I took screenshots of some news updates that Malik sent me. Amir opened his photo album and clicked on a picture. Then he handed me the phone, and the two girls shuffled their chairs closer to get a good look. I looked down at the screenshot, and it was a picture of a destroyed building with a wreckage of helicopters and military jeeps beside it. What am I looking at? I asked. That was one of the head military posts for scientific research, Amir answered. Scroll through the photos to see the others. I swiped onto the next picture and looked at a similar scene with different surroundings. There were two more pictures, and all of them showed the bases had been completely trampled by dinos. So much research was lost, Amir continued. Those buildings had tons of DNA samples, findings, and equipment. They were all attacked by herds of dinosaurs, and I mean the big ones.
When was this?
Haywan asked as she took the phone and studied the images. 2 days ago, the doctor said. Malik said they got calls of distress from all these bases at the same time. Like it was synchronized? I asked, and Amir nodded.
A planned attack to destroy the research?
Kat asked. That's what it looked like, the doctor said with a frown. The dinos weren't only interested in the people. It really looks like they wanted to destroy the whole building. And they succeeded. This is fucking nuts. I rubbed my forehead. I have to agree with you there, Amir replied, as Haywan handed him back his phone. All I have is the information Malik tells me, but I still don't think I fully processed it all. If the attacks really weren't a coincidence, I mused, then that means someone or something was specifically targeting the research labs to destroy as much as possible. This could only be to keep us from working out what's going on and how to stop it. The door into the ward opened, and an older man in scrubs walked in and headed straight for the coffee machine. He had bushy white hair and wore the same coat as Amir, although his attire was still crisp and clean. Hey, Colin, Amir said, as the man gave him a tired wave. How are you?
Same as ever, Colin sighed as he grabbed a blue mug and started up the machine. There's too many people getting attacked, and not enough staff. It's getting worse out there.
Do you have enough supplies here? I asked.
We're very well stocked,
Colin replied as he picked up his coffee and leaned against the table.
Certainly enough supplies to last a while, but that isn't much good if there aren't enough staff members to use them. I just needed a little pick-me-up. I'm not sure the girl with the neck bite is going to make it.
The doctor sipped his coffee and hurried back through the doorway, and I knew tensions must be high with so much pressure on the staff.
The attacks are becoming more frequent, Amir told us. We're getting more and more people every day turning up with injuries. Some of them are half dead when they arrive. I don't recognize the world outside anymore.
Nobody could have prepared for this, I said, as I leaned back into the comfort of the soft chair. I'm amazed things like hospitals are still running to some capacity. It's good to be reminded there are always people willing to help each other.
I don't know how much longer we can keep going, though, Amir admitted. I think some of the staff want to leave, but they either feel guilty or know they probably wouldn't survive for very long. You must have seen a lot of towns and cities on your drive. Are other places still running?
It's been a lot of ghost towns,
Haywan said.
All the houses are abandoned, and there are cars everywhere. The highway was covered in them.
Society in general has gone down the toilet,
Kat added.
That's why I left my military base that I was stationed at. The men were getting animalistic in their panic.
Really? Amir asked with disgust. That didn't take long, did it? I knew people would do whatever they could to survive, but I hadn't anticipated how awful some would be to each other.
It's been a real eye-opener into morality, I snorted. We've had to defend ourselves from people as well as dinos. Even a priest tried to pull a fast one on us.
Well, on that jolly note, Amir chuckled, and then he yawned.
I should get back to work.
There's always something that needs doing. I can't believe I used to get a big salary for doing this stuff.
But now you're helping save the world, I reminded him. That's a pretty big reward. The tired doctor smiled at me and drained the last of his coffee before he stood up.
"Are you going to wait here for your friend?" he asked. "There are some free rooms down the hall if you want a nap, and the loos are down that way too."
"I'm going to have another coffee,"
Kat said, as she stood up and made her way over to the table.
"The stuff we drank at the power plant tasted like shit compared to this. You guys are living the life of luxury."
"Oh, definitely. If you want biscuits or..."
He was interrupted by the sound of gunshots and a scream, and I jumped to my feet. "What the hell?" Amir muttered, and the sound of screeching tires rang out down the hall. I raced to the ward door and ran out into the main lobby of the hospital with the girls behind me. The sound was coming from the parking lot right outside, and we ran over to the doors to investigate. The scream came again, but it wasn't a pain sound. It was more of a manic laughter. I pulled back a corner of a hanging bedsheet to see three dirty, graffiti-covered vans screech to a halt outside. A man with a red mohawk leaned out of one of the passenger seats and made the same hysterical scream. And the doors started to open, and another 10 large armed men stepped out.
"Fuck,"
Kat whispered as she peeked out of another window.
"What the hell do they want?"
Amir asked, and stepped back from the glass. "I doubt they're looking for stitches," I muttered. "Looks like they're here to raid the hospital."
"They have weapons,"
Kat confirmed. "I see one with a pistol," I reported. "The guy with the mohawk. All the others have blunt instruments."
"What?"
Amir asked in a panicked tone as we turned away from the doors.
We have sick people here. They can't just...
"They can and they will if we do nothing to stop them," I cut the man off. "We need to move fast and barricade this door." I raced back to the ward where Becca was resting, and Amir and the girls followed close behind. There were a few staff members chatting in the hall as I came to a quick stop, and they looked alarmed at our sudden appearance.
"The hospital's about to be raided," I warned. "You need to move the most vulnerable patients somewhere secure, and we need to barricade the entrance immediately."
"What?"
one of the nurses stuttered.
"What can you use to block the doorways?" I barked. "Hurry!"
There are lots of empty beds," Amir said with wide eyes, "and some old broken equipment we have hanging around."
"Get it all," I said. "Spread the word. Get to work now. Are these windows bulletproof?"
"They are,"
Amir assured me.
"They'd break if a van drove through that front entrance, though,"
Kat asked next. And the man paled so much, I knew the answer was yes.
"What's going on?"
Mary asked, as she stuck her head out of Becca's room.
"These people need to rest. We need to move them,"
one of the nurses said as she ran into the room.
"Hospital is under attack. Jason?"
Becca called from the room, and I ran over as one of the injured men was wheeled out on his bed. The blonde Brit was fully alert, and she started to swing her legs off the bed.
"No," I ordered as I rushed over to her. "You need to rest. Stay hidden and stay alive."
"No, I always fight with you guys,"
Becca insisted as she tried to jump down.
"Becca, listen to me," I said, and I firmly held her shoulders. "Your injury puts you at a huge risk right now, and there's no way you can help if you can barely walk. Please do as I say. We'll be okay."
There was a panicked shout, and I heard large objects being scraped over the floor as the staff started to move patients and barricade the doorways. I knew Becca would always want to fight with us, but I had to keep her safe.
"I love you," I said,
and I leaned in and kissed her soft lips. She hungrily kissed me back and ran a hand over the back of my neck, and I lingered there longer than I probably should have just because my nerves were on edge. The idea of separating from the beautiful blonde during all this made me twice as anxious.
"I love you too,"
Becca whispered when we finally parted.
"Keep Kat and Haywan safe."
"Of course I will," I promised.
And a tall young man appeared and grabbed Becca's bed and IV stand.
"I'm taking you to a safer spot," he said as he started to wheel her out the door. "Please keep still."
Becca blew me a kiss as she was taken out of the room, and I swiftly ran back out to get to work. The staff had moved quickly, and I figured they were used to dealing with stressful situations as efficiently as possible. When I raced back into the main lobby, they were already securing the barricade at the entrance. Kat and Haywan were helping stack beds on top of each other, while doctors and nurses pushed large computers and kitchen appliances behind the beds. "Have they made a move?" I asked, as I hurried over to the girls.
"They were examining all the windows up front when we started making the barricade,"
Kat reported.
"I think they were trying to suss out if there were any booby traps or anything."
"Knock, knock!"
came a cry from outside, and the staff looked around nervously. There was a tapping on the glass door, and then the sound of someone throwing their body weight against it.
"Time to open up!"
the voice called,
and the man sounded like he was enjoying this. He had a thick and sloppy British accent, and I could hear him snort a wad of snot into his throat before he continued.
We just need to borrow a couple of plasters if you could possibly spare a few.
A roar of laughter broke out from the other men, and one of them made a howling noise as they slammed against the door again.
They sound fucking feral,
Kat said, and then her face drained of color.
Fuck. The Jeep.
We'd parked close to the door to rush Becca inside, and the storage box on the Jeep was full of Kat's weaponry from the base. But you've got the keys, I countered. They can't open up the box without the keys, right?
I hope not,
the soldier said warily.
But if they break it open, then all those weapons are suddenly in their hands. Did you see anyone with an axe out there?
No, but I'm not discounting the possibility, I replied. This could be good, though. Your Jeep and our bikes are blocking their path to the doors. They can't drive through the entrance with the Jeep there.
But they can drive through my fucking Jeep,
Kat countered. Oh, fuck. We only have two bikes if that Jeep gets taken down, I muttered.
We need to take them down first,
Haywan said as she gripped her rifle.
Where can we get a good aim from?
The voices of the gang members started to move away from the door, and I held up a finger for a moment while I listened to the mumbled words of a man.
Surround this bitch,
the same thick voice ordered.
Them doors are locked, and someone's held up in there. I'm not wasting any ammo trying to shoot through this shit. Take a look and find me a discreet entrance, yeah?
Discreet?
One of the cronies snorted.
You've never been discreet a day in your life.
The loud thwack of something hitting flesh cut off the conversation, and it didn't continue from there. They didn't seem to be trying the front door anymore, and we heard their voices drift further away as they made their way around the building.
What do we do?
A young woman in blue scrubs gasped.
We don't have any weapons.
All the staff should go and be with the patients, I decided. Keep everyone away from windows and doors, and hide if you have to. The medical staff nodded, and they all started to hurry away from the lobby. Amir, I called as the doctor started to run. Make sure Becca's safe. Please.
She's the pretty blonde with the bandaged leg,
Haywan hollered as well.
I will find her.
The doctor nodded and then disappeared into the ward. Let's get these bastards, I said. If we go one story up, we can get a better shot than we can on the ground floor without ending up in a tight spot.
Let's go,
Haywan agreed, and we turned to find the stairs.
I have no idea where the stairs are,
Kat said.
Should we take the lifts?
I've avoided using elevators, I said as I eyed the silver doors. If the power ends up being cut, there isn't exactly a repairman we can call right now. We heard the echo of a door rattling wildly down a side hall. Fuck it, I said, and I slammed my hand down on the elevator button. We'll risk it for Becca. The elevator pinged as its doors opened, and we jumped inside before Haywan hit the first floor button. The doors closed, and I held my breath as we shot upward and stopped again quickly. The doors slowly slid open as an automated voice announced we were on the first floor, and we hurried out into the corridor. The lights above us were off, but the windows on this floor weren't covered like they were downstairs, so there was enough natural light to see. The floor was more white linoleum, and there was a window to our left at the end of the hall. We raced toward it, and I peered down to see the red Mohawk man and two of his giant cronies. The two men were prowling around in the hedges near the edge of the hospital, but Mohawk was standing around with his lanky arms crossed and a smug smirk on his face.
Mohawk's got his gun in hand,
Haywan observed. What kind of pistol is that? I asked, and squinted through the window.
Makarov,
Kat answered with a shake of her head.
Pretty common for the gangs here to smuggle them in. 8 rounds of 9mm. I heard him shooting when he pulled up, but I didn't get a count. So I don't know how many rounds are left, or even if he reloaded.
Oh, shit, I muttered.
The others have got a golf club and a 2x4 with nails sticking out of one end.
Kat noted as we stood back from the window.
Neither could shatter the glass of this place, but if they get impatient looking for a clean entrance, they could probably drive one of those vans straight through.
Let's take them out, I sighed. The girls stood pressed against the wall to the left, and I stood out of sight on the right as I reached for the window handle. Then Haywan glanced at the hallway stretching behind her and silently pointed. I looked around her shoulder and saw there was a second window not far away. I nodded, and the two girls hurried off to set up at the other window. Then I slowly opened the small glass window beside me. It was rigged so no one could open it more than 4 inches, but this was just wide enough for the nose of my rifle to fit through. I could hear the conversation of the men below, and it was clear the red mohawk guy was the little ringleader. The other two men just grunted in agreement as he spoke in his high-pitched, manic tone.
"I think I'll get me a little nurse as well,"
he said, and then spat on the ground.
"Maybe we can keep one of these fucking nerds alive if we find one with big fake tits."
The two giant men moved through the hedges some more and snorted laughter.
Yeah, that's it,"
Mohawk said, and bounced on his toes. One of his eyelids twitched repeatedly, and I wondered if this guy was a druggie.
"We'll take all the shit we can carry in the vans, and form me a nice little wife. Oh, my balls have been blue for too long."
I wrinkled my nose and looked into the room ahead to see Cat slowly pull open their window. There was a sudden creak as the window moved, and we all dove away from sight as quickly as possible.
"The fuck was that?"
one of the men mumbled.
"You hear that?"
I risked a peek through the bottom corner of the window. Both cronies stumbled out of the bushes and looked all around, and Mohawk smiled in the creepiest way as he waggled his eyebrows at the darkened ground floor windows of the hospital.
"How many women do you think are hiding out in there?"
Mohawk asked as he clutched his junk.
"Oh, if I could get two of them, that would be even better. It's the end of the fucking world. I could take whatever I want, thanks to these big bastard lizards."
The Mohawk man threw his head back with a scream and howled into the air, and I knew this was our chance. He and the other two were standing around in one clump, and they were distracted. I waved at the girls as I stood up and hit against the wall, and I started to count down on my fingers. 3, I mouthed. 2, 1. I twisted, aimed through the open crack in the window, and pulled the trigger with Mohawk man's skull in my sights. One of his friends moved just as I did, and the huge man lumbered into the crosshairs and accidentally took a bullet for his leader. The ringleader missed getting struck by mere inches as the blood splattered from his crony's head and painted Mohawk's shirt as red as his hair. The girls had both shot at the cronies too, and both of the huge men collapsed to the ground. Then the Mohawk man screamed like a banshee, and he wildly started to shoot a volley of bullets up in the air toward us.